This is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you're listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. I will not grow into a sad old red, or be comforted by disillusion. I will not fall upon a sword of dreams, or speak to the young of better times when I was young. No, I will not grow into a sad old red, or live to see the death of joy, or pass a torch I have never borne alone. We are in this together. We have a long way to go. This is Utah Phillips again. It's a really warm, almost spring-like Sunday afternoon here in Nevada City, California. Actually, Sunday morning. We broadcast here from 11 o'clock till noon. As I say, we want people when they're getting out of church so that we can run them through some rehab. And that, of course, was the music of the Borsdorfs. I'm in here in the studios of Community Radio, KVMR, Nevada City, California, with Steve Baker, who is running all the technical things, because sometimes I feel I make a Luddite look like an astronaut. And I want to wish you, yesterday was the advent of the Chinese New Year. It wasn't celebrated here. Our Chinatown is long gone. I talked to my old friend Mark Ross up in Butte, Montana, where there's colder than Great Barking Jesus. For some reason, the government of Taiwan sent them a Chinese dragon. And meanwhile, the whole town's on hard times, not just the Chinese community. And I called Mark, he said, oh yeah, they had the world's smallest, highest, coldest, loudest Chinese New Year parade. It was about 20 people, and it was below zero, but they did manage to set off 10,000 firecrackers to inaugurate that event. Here in this country, you ought to be paying attention to the Chinese New Year, because after all, it is the year of the dolt. Well, that poem that I read at the beginning, I made that up myself. I will not grow into a sad old red. I was with some young people in Washington, D.C. lately. None of them over the age of 22, but all members of the new general membership branch of the Industrial Workers of the World, young Wobblies, all politically engaged in a tremendous variety of things. And I was so taken in by their enthusiasm, by their optimism. You know, when you've been at this for a long time, it's sometimes hard to hold on to that, but it's good to see. It's good to be in that. And no, I do not intend to grow into a sad old red, but to be part of that river, part of that stream. Another bunch of young people up in Portland, Oregon, went up to the World Trade Organization demonstration, a watershed event in the history of this country. What a way to kick off a millennium! And they went up there. They took a recording machine and a microphone there from KBOO in Portland, and did an audio zine called Hotline. And then very kindly sent me a copy. Now I've lost the letter that they sent me along with that. So you folks up there, would you please fire one down to me? I need to know more about you. Anyway, I want to start off playing a couple of excerpts from that WTO zine that these young folks put together up there. And right after that, listen to a song by my old friend Charlie King. The song is called Our Life is More Than Our Work. Now, this is a real simple song, and there's no reason for you not to get together around your radio and sing along on the chorus. It's also a real danceable tune, so this is a good time to kind of bounce around your kitchen and do a little Virginia reel, do a little boogie, get down and sing along with this, Our Life is More Than Our Work, WTO zine.
Clinton had a lot of people on it. Second day of the WTO meetings.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the march broke off, or the steelworkers were just like talking for a couple hours, doing speeches, rallies, got kind of like talking heads, like they got a congressperson, blah, blah, blah. So people started yelling downtown, so we took a big, huge contingent, several hundred, and went up to Pike Place Market and got up onto the streets there, and we got to a corner where the riot cops weren't at yet, the whole march, so we sat down in the intersection, probably 40 of us. And me and Josh, like, are you ready to get arrested? We're like, yeah, let's just we're here, this is fine, this is a good place, you know, to show our point. We're outside of the whatever, no protest zone. And we're sitting there, and they just rolled in super quick, and all of a sudden you heard clink, 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 clink all around you in this crowd of like 40 circled sitting people, and the tear gas are just landing in us, you know. And so we crouched down and stuff, and I hadn't really gotten a real good lungful of it yet, and it was stronger than the day before. And completely crouched down, face on the street, curled up in a ball, my whole face covered with like my sweatshirt and a handkerchief, and you could just feel it come into your lungs. Like, I couldn't stand it. It felt like I was contracting, and Josh just started like screaming and spasming. He was like, I can't take it. We both started to get out, and he kind of fell down and sort of halfway collapsed. And I pulled him up, and he pulled me up, and we kind of pulled out of that, and it was mad. Like, you could hear the hysterics and panic in everybody's voice. People were just screaming like, water, and that, you know, like, kind of voice, like, something, emergency has happened, and people were for their lives. There's a guy in a wheelchair. I heard this story, the pretty brutal, the concussion bomb went off right in his face, just got thrown, and just happened to land on his lap, and boom, right there. There's like five of us trying to pick up his wheelchair and carry it out. It was really tough. Just like I said, people were already gagging and doubled over pretty much, and couldn't muster much strength. The lady passed out, it was probably in the 30s, you know. She's like in a yellow rain pants and sort of businessy looking. I think she was with the march, but just like everybody was getting gassed, and we tried to pick her up, you know, three of us, and carry her out, and we were just screaming for medics. Mm-hmm. Like, at that point, I was like totally expected there was going to be dead people at the end of that, because the old people, not having the older people and people that could be sick or with asthma, like, is incredulous.
I kind of feel like we did a lot that night. I mean, as far as being supportive of the union guys, that was definitely the event, because they had to stand there in the rain for an hour waiting for the interfaith group to show up.
It was a good thing to hear them join in, and eventually we sang our songs enough times that people started learning them around us. And I think one of the most gratifying things that I experienced while singing that night was actually having union maid requested by the end of the night in the rain. Well, there are two favorite parts. One was, I guess there are two things we really did, which was sing to people in the lockdowns. Sing while we were traveling from lockdown to lockdown, and then specifically targeting delegates walking down the street and singing that one verse of Cops of the World. Like, we'd only make the first two verses, but that was a good, very good feeling, especially when people in the lockdown, they were very, you know, what, their fourth, fifth hour into it, were requesting songs.
Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union until the day I die.
You say, look all around you, see all there is just to be alive about. Look all around you, please, look all around you, see all there is just to being alive. Oh, our life
is more than our work, and our work is more than our job. Don't you know that our life is more than our work, and our work is more than our job.
Time clocks and bosses, investments and losses, how can we measure our living in numerals? Time clocks and bosses, investments and losses, how can we measure our life in these ways when our life
is more than our work, and our work is more than our job. Our life is more than our work, and our work is more
life could be, feel how our life could flow. If just for once we could get to letting go. Think how our life could be, feel how our life could flow. If just for once we could let ourselves go. Take a dive. We got a universe we gotta keep alive. Let go what holds you back. Close your eyes. Take the dive. We got a universe. It's fighting to live. Oh, our life
is more than our work. And our work is more than our job.
And you sing about
our life.
Charlie King. Charlie King is a live wire. I hope we're going to have him out here in Grass Valley with Len Wallace, a great accordion player and one of the finest singers that Canada ever had from Windsor, Ontario. I'm trying to get them out here in May. It's wonderful, this growing bonding between organized labor and young people, and vice versa, to see it going back and forth. It's a tremendous, it's a vital thing that needs to happen in this culture with its built-in, its engineered generational gaps, you know, as each generation is, there's a young people's market and there's a young married's market and there's an old people's market, and we're kept separate from each other. It's good to see these young folks coming together. Where did it begin, this movement? Where did it begin? Well, there were all kinds of labor actions, of course, in the 1800s. I've been accustomed all my life to saying in the last century, but now it's the century before last. But 1877 was a watershed year, and in many ways a very tragic year, but an important year to the labor movement. The railroads had spread out like a spiderweb all over the East. The first transcontinental had been completed. There was a depression going on, brought on in consequence of over-industrialization. Well, the railroads, though, that were run by what were called robber barons, multimillionaires, and their cronies, they wanted to keep the dividends up. They wanted to increase, sometimes by double, the dividends that their shareholders were getting. They did this by raising the freight rates to the farmers and the freight rates to the business concerns, and then by cutting wages by as much as 10% to 50%, from $1.10 to 85 cents a day. Well, one railroad after another went out the strike, out on strike all across the East. The militia was called out to drive them back to work. The militia was their friends and was their neighbors, people that they'd known, and they wouldn't fire on the strikers. So the governors of Pennsylvania, of Maryland, called for federal troops. The president sent in federal troops. The first time in the history of the country that the federal army had been used to suppress a domestic problem. Well, they came in sure with mounted cavalry and with artillery. And at its peak, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Chicago, St. Louis were under martial law, with troops, with guns, Gatling guns, stationed at the corners of the towns. Well, finally they had got driven back to work, bullied back to work, but it was that those railroad strikes of 1877 that told the people of America in no uncertain terms that capital was national and that labor had to become national. That they needed, the only way they were going to deal with the problems of industrialization, of corporatization, was by having a national labor movement. And that's when it was born, out of that cauldron, out of that strife. We're in the same situation today when capital is internationalized, and we desperately need to have an international union. Hell, Bill Haywood said that in 1905 at the founding convention of the Industrial Workers of the World. He said, world labor needs a world union. Well, we couldn't do it then. But by God, we have the opportunity, we have the tools, and the overwhelming need to do that just now. There aren't any songs that I know of about the great railroad strikes of 1877, but one of the roads that was being struck was the C&O Road. And, here's a song from that contemporary with that period, and it tells part of the story. George Alley was a hoghead, was engineer on the FFV, the Fast Flying Vestibule through Virginia. And the train wrecked. And the song says, George Alley saying, I want to die for the engine I love. Well, of course, the boss loves that. But then in another part of the song, it says, murdered on the railroad. Well, listen to George Alley's FFV. It's sung by, well, I'll leave it up. You guess who's singing this.
Swiftest on the line, running along that C&O Road, just 20 minutes behind, running into Saville headquarters on the line, receiving their strict orders from a station just behind. Georgie's mother came to him with a bucket on her arm. She said, my darling son, be careful how you run. There's many a man has lost his life in trying to make lost time. But if you run your engine right, you'll get there just on time. Up the track she darted, into a rock she crashed. Upside down the engine turned, and Georgie's breast is smashed. His head lay against the firebox door, the flames were rolling high. I'm proud to be born for an engineer and see no road to die. The doctor said to Georgie, my darling boy, be still. Your life may yet be saved if it is God's blessed will. Oh no, cried George, this will not do. I'd rather die so free. I want to die for the engine I love, 143. And the doctor said to Georgie, your life cannot be saved. Murdered upon a railway and laid in the lonely grave. His face was covered up with blood, his eyes they could not see. And the very last words poor Georgie cried, when near my God to thee.
Yeah, you were right. That's Joan Baez in 1962. But playing for all the world like Maybelle Carter, the singing Carter family. At that time of the railroad strikes of 1877, it was said that Chicago, there were so many sympathizers with the railroad men that Chicago almost was on the edge of having a general strike. Now, what is a general strike? Well, a general strike is what asserts the essential solidarity of all labor, regardless of what their trade, their craft, or what union they belong to. And emerging from that national movement came the general strike idea of that essential solidarity, that an injury to one is an injury to all. And there are a number of general strikes. There was Seattle 1919. Well, the one I think of is let's go to San Francisco 1934. The longshoremen were out on strike. They had to go out on strike. They were looking for their wages to be increased from 85 cents an hour to over a dollar, 85 cents a day to over a dollar a day. Now, back there in 1877, it was the same thing, wasn't it? I mean, that period of time and striking over the same pay scale, well, it was patently ridiculous. They also wanted a 30-hour work week, which meant that there would be more people working. It wasn't long before the 10 maritime unions went out along with the longshoremen in a bitter, protracted strike. But it developed so much sympathy in San Francisco with the other trades, with the other associations, that finally, one at a time, the painters, the boilermakers, all of them, they began to go out until there was a general strike committee formed. And at that time, at its peak, there were 110 unions acting together in the general strike, representing over 100,000 workers. And not only did it shut down the port of San Francisco, it shut down San Francisco. And it shut down every port from San Diego to Seattle. That's the power of organized labor. Now, nobody was throwing bricks, nobody was firing guns, nobody was armed. All of that came from the other side. That came from the vigilantes. That came from the thugs that were hired by management to go out and break this strike. That's where the violence came from. That shutdown of the West Coast, that shutdown of San Francisco, happened through the exercise of nonviolent direct action. Nonviolent direct action. The violence, for the most part, and I only say for the most part, has come from the other side. It hadn't taken us very long to learn that the boss has all the guns. The boss can go from a handgun to a hydrogen bomb. And he say, come up that road. How far up that road do you want to go? And he gets you up that road, and he'll kill you. The labor movement has always understood that. And we've always had a problem with our hotheads who said, let's go get them, let's go get them. But things like the San Francisco General Strike demonstrate that we can do it, and we can do it nonviolently. Well, that strike was broken. Eventually, most of the demands of the longshoremen were met. At that big meeting to call for the general strike, the one who made the motion calling for the strike was a fine union man by the name of Joe Murphy. Well, Joe Murphy's passed away. Had a memorial for him out at his home there in Occidental. And this is one of the songs we sang, Power in the Union. This is Joe Hill's best song. Well, we almost missed the damn thing. Chorus is, there is power in a band of working folks when we stand hand in hand. That's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. I'll teach you the chorus. There is power in a band of working folks when we stand hand in hand. That's a power industrial union grand. Have you got that again? You understand the chorus? Everybody got it now? All right. Oh, would you have freedom from wage slavery and come join the grand industrial band? Oh, would you from misery and
hunger be free. Come on, do your share, lend a hand. There is power, there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. That's the power, that's the power that must rule in every land. One industrial union brand. Oh, would you have mansions of gold in the sky and live in a shack that's away in the back? Or would you have wings up in heaven to fly and start here with a rag on your back? But there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. That's the power that must rule in every land, one industrial union brand. Oh, if you like sluggers to beat in your head, don't organize all union despise. If you want nothing before you are dead, shake hands with your boss and look wise. But there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. That's the power that must rule in every land, one industrial union brand. So come all ye workers from every land, and come join the grand industrial band. But then we our share of this earth shall demand. Come on, do your share, lend a hand. There is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. That's the power that must rule in every land, one industrial union brand.
Power in the Union. Joe Hill's, as I say, Joe Hill's best song. Joe Hill, well, most of you have heard me sing and talk about him before. And Joe was a union songwriter who, with the industrial workers of the world, who was killed November 19, 1915, and framed up on a murder charge in Utah, and he was shot by a firing squad. Joe requested that his ashes be put in little packets and sent all over the world to be scattered on the ground wherever working people were locked in struggle. Well, they were put in little packages with a picture on one side and his last will on the other, and they were sent all over. One package, however, remained in the IWW office in Chicago. Well, there was a raid. The hall was raided. Now, this was the First World War when Congress passed the sedition laws. The sedition laws said that every postmaster in the country, big town, little town, didn't no matter where, that if they saw anything coming through the mail that looked even faintly seditious, even a little anti-government, that stuff was to be seized and sent to the Postmaster General, Lamar, there in Washington, D.C., to be investigated. Well, when the cops crashed into the Wobbly Hall in Chicago, one of the fellow workers grabbed that packet of Joe Hill's ashes, stuffed him into an envelope quickly, scribbled the address of a friend on it, and dashed out the back door and dropped it in the mailbox to try to save it. Well, that envelope was torn by the sorting equipment, and the contents were revealed, and it was sent off to the Postmaster General. Well, over the years, that packet of ashes gradually disappeared. Well, it wound up in the espionage files of the post office at the National Archives. It was finally, in 1986, an archivist there by the name of Aloha South found them, and we found out about it, and we petitioned successfully and got Joe's ashes back. And we did distribute them all around the country, up there in Butte, Montana. Old Art Nurse took a little pinch of those ashes, were supposed to go on Frank Little's grave, and he threw them into the hole in my guitar. That was the guitar I was playing on Power in the Union there. Let's listen to one of Joe's songs, one of his unknown songs that's hardly ever sung. Alfred Esteban Cortez, born in Mexico, joined the IWW in 1916. He recorded this at his son Carlos Cortez's kitchen table in 1900. Well, he was 73 years old when he sang this.
And these ills do not only befall mankind, it befalls to the fair sex also. For that reason, you find these few words that were also thought up so as to show what we have to suffer under capitalism. One little girl, fair as a pearl, worked every day in the laundry. All that she made for food she paid, so she slept on a park bench so soundly. An old procurer spied her there. She came and whispered in her ear, "Come with me now, my girlie. Don't sleep out in the cold. Your face and dress is curly. We'll bring you fame and gold. Automobiles to ride in, diamonds and silks to wear. You'll be a star right down in the red light. You'll make your fortune there. Same little girl, no more pearl, walks all alone along the river. 5 years have flown, her health is gone. She would look at the water and shiver. Whene'er she'd stop to rest and sleep, she'd hear a voice call from the deep, 'Come with me now, my girlie. Don't sleep out in the cold. Your face and dress is curly. We'll bring you fame and gold. Automobiles to ride in, diamonds and silks to wear. You'll be a star right down in the red light. You'll make your fortune there. Girls in this way fall every day, and have been falling for ages. Who is to blame? You know his name. It's the boss that's paid starvation wages. A homeless girl can always hear temptation calling everywhere. Come with me now, my girlie. Don't sleep out in the cold. Your face and dress is curly. We'll bring you fame and gold. Automobiles to ride in, diamonds and silks to wear. You'll be a star bright down in the red light. You'll make your fortune there.
Kenny Hall down in Fresno with the Texas Two-Step. That's pretty jolly music considering the music that we've been playing. I love what Kenny does. My mother introduced me to the labor movement simply because the books were on the shelves and there were never any restraints on going whatever direction my mind chose to grow in. When I hit the road, I ran into organizers working on the road crews, tramping around the country, who told me about their struggles and told me about why they were on hard times because of what they'd been doing with their lives. I was back in New York City, down there at Gertie's Folk City. There was a birthday party. It was for Minnie Corder, the world's oldest wobbly. She was near 100. And that's when I first met Fred Hansen. Fred Hansen was IWW organizer on the docks in Houston, Texas, over 40 years, and every working day of his life, he carried the red card in his union. And Fred Hansen was a powerhouse, and he was one of those elders that kept my union alive when it was in danger of perishing, just on sheer heart, brute strength, and faith in the future. Why the IWW? Why me and the IWW? Because ideas are imperishable. Organizations come and go, but the idea of the one big union of all skilled, semi-skilled, and unskilled workers in one big union, and then the general strike, the workers with their hands in their pockets, and then you find out really who has the power as the rich starve and freeze in the dark alone. Also, the Industrial Workers of the World is the only organization I've ever been familiar with that never broke faith with its elders. Never broke faith with its elders. It's a clear chain, a clear stream of thought and action from the beginning of this union to right now, today, with those young people in the IWW in Washington, D.C. Fred Hansen passed away from congestive heart failure. When I found out about that, well, I went out on the back porch and sat down and wrote a poem about him. Tubes choked, pump broke, wires fried, lights died, whole damn place went dark. What do we do now? Been around so long, no one's thought how to get by without this one. Get another? Hell, they don't make them anymore. This model ain't been in the catalog since I started here. Well, figure it out. Look, here's what you do. Why don't you round up the crew, look at the whole thing real close, find out how it's held up so good so long, and build another? Can't. Already know that. Same parts as that one and the one over there. Just don't know what this one ran on. That's all. Some kind of juice. Secret formula. Probably lost. Ain't lost. There's one near like it in Montana, one over in Atlanta, another in Chicago. Look, you go there. Find them. Study out that juice. Bring some back, much as you can haul. Do it now, quick. We got to get things moving around here. Fred Hansen, fellow worker Fred Hansen. My wife and I were in West Virginia playing through a place called Mountain Stage. Now, down underneath that concert hall was a cluttered lawyer's office. Now, I can't remember his name. I'm not good at remembering names. But he invited us down there when the show was over, and he was a labor lawyer. And when I walked in there, I saw that he had a guitar leaning up against the desk. He had this little, one of these inexpensive little Kmart sort of tape recorders there. You know, I love to play these kitchen tapes in order to defy the engineering mind. And he told me he had songs that he wanted to teach me. One of them about a great organizer for the Musicians Union in West Virginia by the name of Ned Guthrie. So, let's let him tell the story and then sing you his ballad for Ned Guthrie.
Utah, I want to give you a couple of... I really enjoyed your performance, incidentally, today over at the Mountain Stage. And I want to give you a couple union songs here from West Virginia. One of them has to do with a fellow named Ned Guthrie, and it's called Heaven Joins Musicians Local 136. I call it a warm-hearted tribute to an outstanding union president. An old country performer down here, comedian, singer, named Sleepy Jeffers, had an early morning show here on WCHS, and the radio canceled him. It was kind of putting the heat on him. Of course, Ned was the local union president, went over to see him. They said, Mr. Guthrie, you say one more word and we'll put you in the federal penitentiary for a felony. And Ned, was going to say one more word, which was bullshit. But they were so damn adamant about it that he thought he'd better check it out. We learned about the Lee Act, which got passed back there in the late 40s as a result of the big... studio musicians strike, where they couldn't come out with any live records and all that for several years. Big deal with the Petrillo when he was president of the union and all that. And so all of the record companies and the networks and all the powerful people in the broadcasting industry got together and got this Lee Act passed, which said basically if you were to in any way try to influence radio or television entertainment, it was a felony. Probably the only people in the world couldn't organize then would be the musicians. So Ned said that was a bunch of baloney and that he would get that Lee Act repealed. And he worked on it about 8 years. Even his own union, the American Federation of Musicians, which, you know, we're all members of, thought he was crazy. But, you know, he got Senator Byrd and John Slack and a whole bunch of these fellows who had some positions of power in Washington, and damned if he didn't single-handedly pass that, or repeal that Lee Act. Now, Ned is now in charge of the AFM lobbying in Washington, and he's still working for great causes down there. And this is a tribute to him, which I'd like to hear you sing and put the word around about what a stout guy he is. Incidentally, if you'd like to meet him, I can call him on the phone and introduce you to him. You ought to know this guy, and he ought to know you. But anyway, he was always working on some project, and one day I was walking up Corey Street and went by his music store, Guthrie and Bean, in those days. So Georgie says, step in here, and he pulled me in a little alcove there off the street, and he told me about this preacher came in there, and he was performing Saving Souls on television, and Ned kept telling him he needed to belong to the union, and the preacher said, well, my dues are paid in heaven, and Ned said, to hell with that, we got a lot of good union musicians in heaven, and by golly, you know, you ain't any better than them. So he finally talked them into joining, and they found out about the union trust fund, came to all their meetings and made more money than they ever made in their life, and really were inspired by what a union could do. But it tickled me. I could just see Ned getting that fella in the corner and saying, look, buddy, we got plenty of good union members up there in heaven, too, and don't have me that baloney. And he's a stout guy. There was a bunch of kids got hired up at Montgomery to play a show, and the saloon owner claimed that they played too loud. They were rock musicians. And Ned didn't much like rock musicians, but that didn't make any difference. They were in the union. He didn't like their music. He liked the musicians. And no sooner had this fella from the saloon thrown the band leader through the window than just as fast as he'd get up there, Ned walked right back through that window and told them that they would pay the entire amount they owed this kid. And if they didn't play soft enough, you call Ned and he'd slow them down some. But they had a choice. They're either going to pay him or they're going to litigate, and they'd never play a union job in there in that saloon again. And they capitulated. That's how strong he is. And he's a great guy. And based on that preacher's story, I wrote this for Ned. A crisis arose in heaven one bright and sunny day. A crowd of people wanted in, but Gabriel could not play. They stopped them at the pearly gates while Gabriel stayed away. Ned Guthrie checked his union card and stopped the show that day. St. Peter interpleaded, Moses joined the stew. Angels with their harps came by, Ned Guthrie stopped them too. He said those angels have for years been pulling those same old tricks. From now on, if they're going to play, they'll join Local 136. It started with a preacher on Oak Hill Live TV. He tried to do the Lord's true work with a guitar on his knee. When asked to join the union, he paused and bowed his head. My dues are paid, my dues are paid in heaven. Nuts to you, he said to Ned. They finally got it all worked out in heaven, the accord. They all joined Local 136 and did the work of the Lord. The people passed the pearly gates and entered St. Peter's yard, while Gabriel blew a ragtime tune and then checked their union card. I haven't sung that for quite a while.
I love finding things like that, pawing through the pile of detritus of a reasonably well-spent life there in my house. I'm so glad I discovered that. Hey, if anybody remembers who that lawyer is, I sure would like to thank him for that. He sang me another song there. Yeah, let's continue it. He sang me another song about a man I admired enormously. He was the president of the United Mine Workers of America, UMWA, and he was a reform candidate, Miners for Democracy. He finally got kind of red baited out by a real conservative faction. That's a whole other story, and I've told that one elsewhere. Let's listen to him in that little office and that little recorder singing the ballad for Arnold Miller.
Now, the other one that I wrote was to Arnold Miller. Arnold, of course, was the union president of the UMW, and we knew him here for many, many years. Met him first in politics when he was a coal miner, and then he was part of the Miners for Democracy when they had the big black lung fight up here in our legislature, and at the 11th hour finally got a bill passed acknowledging for the first time in America that there was such a thing as a black lung, and it wasn't just silicosis, or it wasn't just the fact the miners had smoked too much. And believe you me, these Miners for Democracy were powerful and courageous men, and they learned to read a bill that had come out of committee quicker than a bunch of Philadelphia lawyers. They could tell where they'd been skinned, and they stuck right in there, and Arnold Miller was one of their leaders, and they later took that thing down to Washington and got a national black lung bill passed, and they also got an occupational health and safety bill passed. And Arnold then ran for the presidency of the United Mine Workers of America against a very corrupt union when Tony Boyle was there. And, of course, Tony Boyle killed Yablonski, and that's when Arnold came into the picture. And we were in Pittsburgh, the very first convention they had, and they rewrote their constitution of that union with a committee of the whole. Every miner there had his piece. And a lot of them hated Arnold, and he'd let them stand up and say their piece. It went on a week. And he'd say, "Thank you, brother." And they would yell at him and scream at him and cuss him. And he said, "You've got every right to do that, brother. Don't agree with you, but thank you for your comments." And they devised a new constitution, and the miners' movement was reorganized by the ballot box, which was an amazing thing. And there were so many courageous men, but Arnold, of course, was the first president of that outfit, and he was one of the original courageous guys. So this is a tribute to him and to all those brave men of the Miners for Democracy. Arnold Miller was a man who came up with a plan to put the Union back from where it came. And he came to town that day straight from West Virginia, and he gave it to the men to run again. So remember 72, no matter what you do, if times seem dark and times seem blue, if the men all stick together to good and stormy weather, then nobody better never ever want you. Oh, the Union had its woes, but that's the way it goes. You always hope to have a better day, and it gives you faith in man to know somehow they can use the ballot box to sow to find a better way. Don't remember 72, no matter what you do, if times seem dark and times seem blue, if the men all stick together to start good talk to bad and stormy weather, then nobody better never ever. What the future holds in store is the hope for something more than the tragedy and death that haunts the past. And we all pray that tomorrow will end the grief and sorrow, and that good times now will finally come at last. So remember 72, no matter what you do, times seem dark and times seem blue, if the men all stick together to good and stormy weather, then nobody better never ever. So remember 72, if it's the last thing you do, let's never have to go through hell again. Let us save all that we did for the widow and the kid. to lose it now would surely be a sin. So remember, Cindy Lou, no matter what you do, if times seem dark and times seem blue, if the men all stick together through dark and stormy weather, then nobody better never ever on you.
Well, a ballad for Arnold Miller. Well, we're crawling toward the end of this, and I do want to squeeze this last song in. The labor movement does have a lot of problems, but, you know, all the news you ever get is off of the boss press, off of the boss media, off the boss television. Isn't that true? So there's nothing good to say about labor. Oh, it's run by organized crime. It's run by criminals. We have had our problems, but then you got to take it local for local, union for union. The American labor movement has been doing a whale of a good job. Criminals, look, capitalism itself is a criminal conspiracy to systematically defraud the working class of the wealth that we create. If we're worried about chiselers, let's start out with the big ones and work our way down to the little ones, because we want the whole thing back.
Seeing them politicians stealing things we'd be loving, you best be believing we've had it up to here with that compromise, yakety 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 yak. We ain't fooling, we want the whole thing back.
We want room for the buffalo. The grizzly needs some place to go. Round up developers, move them on down. We want the whole thing packed.
The jailbird condor might have hope if the green people ever learn how to vote. We could close them roads down, move them off the map. We ain't fooling, we want some wilderness back. Said we would be silent. Stand up, people, now. Shout, protest, and sing. Forever wild, child, let your freedom ring. Yeah, we're so tired of seeing them politicians stealing the things we be loving. You best be believing we've had it up to here with that they compromise. Yakety yak. Fooling, we want the whole thing back. Oh yeah, we ain't fooling, we want the wilderness back.
Great singer out here, Dakota Sid Clifford. We want the whole thing back. You've been listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Thanks for being with us. From Archibald MacLeish. Who are the Bourne brothers in truth? The puddlers scorched by the same flame in the same foundries, those who have spit on the same boards with the blood in it, ridden the same rivers with green logs, fought the police in the parks of the same cities, grinned for the same blows, the same flogging. those that have hidden and hunted and all such, fought together, labored together. They carry the common look like a card, and they pass, touching.